In April this year, and I don't know how I missed this, but a story came out that they had found Noah's Ark. How many of you heard that report? It was plastered on almost every major news outlet, on TV, on newsprint, on the internet. It was a team from China, from an institute called the Noah's Ark Ministries International, based in Hong Kong. They sent up an expedition and found what they believe is Noah's Ark at about 13,000 feet on Mount Ararat in Turkey. They found wood. They came back, brought some of the wood back, and carbon dated it, and it dates around 4,800 years old, which would put it just about the biblical account of the flood. Of course, right after this, another evangelical archaeologist who was sort of teaming up with them but then backed out said it's a hoax because he had heard rumors from the Kurds, from the Kurdish guides, that they had set this whole thing up and actually carried these timbers up on the mountain and built this thing in the glacier, and that they'd gotten these timbers from somewhere in the Black Sea so that when they've carbon dated them, they really are old timbers that are 4,800 years old. But there's no evidence that this man is telling the truth either. So do we know that they've actually found it or not? No, but it would appear that this team, they're presenting a video of it. They're going to be developing a video about it. And they've taken extensive video and pictures. They say that they are 99.9% sure that they have found Noah's Ark. Now, wouldn't that be cool? Yeah, 13,000 feet up. Yeah, wouldn't that be cool? You get it? It's in a glacier, right? It's buried in a glacier. I didn't intend that pun. I've been wondering if they'd find it someday with all our modern technologies. Wouldn't it be just like God to bring it out at the last moment in these end times to kind of say, there really was a flood, there really was a boat. The history of the Bible is true, right? Those kinds of things. Today we begin looking at the story of the flood, and I decided not to carry the whole thing because it spans three chapters. It's quite a long passage, or 2.5 chapters. So we're going to begin with chapter 6 and beginning with verse 9, reading to the end of the chapter. You can follow along up on screen if you'd like. Genesis chapter 6, verse 9. These are the records of the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Noah walked with God. Noah became the father of three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence. God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupt their way upon the earth. Then God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. And behold, I am about to destroy them with the earth. Make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. You shall make the ark with rooms and shall cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you shall make it: the length of the ark, 300 cubits, its breadth, 50 cubits, and its height, 30 cubits. You shall make a window for the ark and finish it to a cubit from the top and set the door of the ark in the side of it. You shall make it with lower, second, and third decks. Behold, I, even I, am bringing the flood of water upon the earth to destroy all flesh, in which is the breath of life from under heaven. Everything that is on earth shall perish, but I shall establish my covenant with you, and you shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds after their kind, and of the animals after their kind, of every creeping thing on the ground after its kind, two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. As for you, take for yourself some of all food which is edible, and gather it to yourself, and it shall be for food for you and for them." Thus Noah did, according to all that God had commanded him. So he did. May the Lord bless the reading of his word. So you have the story of Noah's Ark. It begins with, these are the records of the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Does that kind of strike you as odd that Noah was considered blameless in his time? It says he was a righteous man. We think of righteousness in several senses. We think of it as being holy versus unholy, righteous versus unrighteous. But righteousness also has a relational character to it. So righteousness can mean having a right relationship versus having a wrong relationship. If you're walking in sin, is your relationship with the Lord going to be right? No. So they're kind of intertwined ideas. But the word righteousness has this relational characteristic to it. And I think that's what it's talking about with Noah. Was he a perfect man? No. We know that he was a sinner. Because it says in Romans chapter 3, there is no one righteous, not even one. Right? So we know that. But then there's this curious line, blameless in his time. That can also be translated as perfect in his generations. So now here we get into that weird interpretation that we saw of chapter 6, verses 1 through 9, when we described the Nephilim. Remember that? There was two views of the Nephilim, these giants, offspring of the daughters of men, marrying the sons of God. The first view was that the original view and the historical view was that the angels had come down, left their domain, had seen that the daughters of men were beautiful, and so they came down and essentially had sexual relations with them and produced these hybrid offspring. It sounds like Ripley's Believe It or Not. That was the only view of that text and of Jude and so on until about the 4th century when some Christian theologians were embarrassed by it, and so they came up with the Seth and Cain view, that the sons of God were the sons of Seth and the daughters of men were daughters of Cain, and that these intermarried, and so it polluted the Seth line with these sinful Cainites. Again, we saw from the Bible, other texts, the use of the phrase son of God, we saw that it's most likely angels, even though it's strange. I particularly don't find it strange. I believe the Bible, so. But in this text now, we have Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time, or perfect in his generations. Might it be that that phrase can be translated as pure in his generations? Which means that the human population had been tainted. And what was Satan's purpose in doing that, if that's correct, that angels had actually come in and to water down the bloodline, to prevent the seed of Eve from producing the seed that would crush Satan's head. Now that sounds like a plan that Satan would certainly hatch. It sounds strange to us, but in our present day, this kind of very thing happens. I don't know about them giving birth, but in the cult, people are having sexual relations with demonic entities called succubi and incubi. That's a reality. And it's a very regrettable thing for people to be getting into. So, what if Noah alone was now found, or Noah was one of the few found to have not had his genealogy tainted by this satanic seed? That's one reading of it. The other reading of it is to say that he was just a very, very righteous man, a very blameless man. And I'm not going to quibble over which view you take. For some of you, the angelic view is a little far-fetched, little too Ripley's Believe It or Not. For me, it actually makes better sense of this text to say that Noah's line was pure. He was blameless. And he has three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So if that reading is correct, these three sons are truly descendants of Adam and Eve and are not tainted by this strange anomaly. Then verse 11, now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence. The earth was corrupt. It means to be adulterated. Is that the right word? Adulterated? To be perverted. And you can say that about people morally, but you can say it about people genetically too, can't you? That people have been corrupted genetically. I think it's a both and there, that they were corrupted genetically as well as morally. And what was the earth filled with? Violence. Does it sound familiar to you? In Matthew chapter, I think it's 23 and Luke 17, Jesus says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the last days. And it's quite clear to me that we are living in these last days, and the same kinds of things that were going on in Noah's day, you can expect to see in our day today. And one of the things is there a corrupting of our nation? Is there a corrupting of our world? Not just our nation, but our whole world. And then violence. Is our world filled with violence? Is our nation filled with violence? Yes. God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way upon the earth. How much of flesh had corrupted their way? All flesh had corrupted their way. Then God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. Behold, I am about to destroy them with the earth. The end of all flesh has come before me. It's time to put an end to this, God says. And the earth is filled with violence because of them. Who is this them? Why is it said that way? Because of these people who have corrupted their way. And whether you take it genetically or morally, it can mean either one. And behold, I'm about to destroy them with the earth. Goes on, it says, make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. An ark, normally we think of an ark as a ship, but you know what the word ark means? It means a chest. So you have the Ark of the Covenant. Actually, that's a little bit different word. It has the same kind of idea to it, but the word ark is used in one other context. In Exodus chapter 2, I believe it is, where you have Moses who was put into an ark when he was floated on the river when his mom was trying to save his life. So it's kind of has the idea of boat, but literally it meant a chest. And what do you know? If you follow these instructions later on, what does the ark look like? A giant chest. It's a box with some rounded corners. And it's made out of gopher wood. Some people think that that's cypress. Some people think it's the kind of wood it was. It was a name for the kinds of boards he used. We don't really know. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. So what was the pitch for? This is literally bitumen. Is that it? Bitumen. Do you know what that is, Howard? It's a kind of petroleum product. It's not actually pitch, but it's something that came out of the earth, and it was a water sealer. It made this boat waterproof. Cover it inside and out with pitch, and this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits. Anybody know what a cubic is? A cubit? Good answer, but not my question. My question was, what is a cubit? Sorry. Right. Pardon? Yeah, your middle fingertip to your elbow, roughly. So about 18 inches. And out of that 18 inches, they get the measurements Kathy said. And what were they again?
40.
Right. And the window wasn't just a little window like you see in the old ark pictures. It was probably a window that went the whole length of the ark and had a little roof over it to keep the rain out, and it let light and air into the ark. So it would be a ventilation system, if you will. 450 feet long. From that stop sign, or from that corner to that corner, is 200 feet. So if you stand across the street in front of the triplex, and you look down and you look at the stop sign down at High Street, that's just about 450 feet. So it was just a little bit smaller than the Titanic, but it was bigger than most any of the sailing ships that we built during the 1700s and 1800s. The first time that a ship was built bigger than this was sometime in the 1860s when, I don't know where it was built, whether in England or the United States, but they built a ship that actually was larger than this ship. Is this actually a boat? It's really a barge. It wasn't meant to sail. It was meant to float. You can find some interesting things online. There's a Chinese group that have studied this design of the ark. And what they've discovered is that between stability and comfort and strength, this is right in the middle. So it's almost the perfect vessel for its purpose. What was its purpose? To save selected life from this flood, period. It wasn't meant to be a cruise liner. All it was meant to do was float until the flood was over. If you think about how high it was, this roof is about 22 feet high, 45 feet. So it's twice as high as this room. How wide was it? 75 feet. So this building is 100 feet long. So if you take that room there, that's 16 feet wide. So that's actually, it was 75 to 85 feet. So it's essentially from that wall to the wall in the kitchen. That's how wide it was. And the length of a football field and a half, or a little bit longer. That is one big space, is it not? Twice as high as this. Three decks. Yeah, a lot of animals, so. You shall make a window for the ark, and you shall finish it within to a cubit from above, and set the door of the ark in its side. You shall make it with lower, second, and third decks. So here's the funny thing. It's been spotted many, many times. Somebody could say, well, Sasquatch has been spotted many, many times. So is it the same? Let me read to you some of the sightings. In 275 BC, before Christ, Berossus, a Babylonian historian, wrote, "But of this ship that grounded in Armenia, some part still remains in the mountains, and some get pitched from the ship by scraping it off." 250 years before Christ, somebody spotted this, said that they were getting pitch off of it. Around 75 AD, Josephus said the locals collected relics from the ark and showed them off to this very day. He also said all the ancient historians he knew of wrote about the ark. In 180 AD, 180 years after the birth of Christ, Theophilus of Antioch wrote, "The remains of the ark are to this day to be seen in the mountains." You could go see it. An elderly Arminian man in America said that as a boy, he visited the ark with his father and three atheistic scientists in 1856. Their goal was to disprove the ark's existence, but they found it and became so enraged they tried to destroy it, but could not because it was too big and had petrified. In 1918, one of the atheistic scientists, an Englishman, admitted on his deathbed the whole story was true. In 1876, a distinguished British statesman and author, Viscount James Bryce climbed Ararat and reported finding a 4-foot-long piece of hand-tooled timber at an altitude of more than 13,000 feet. Where did this Hong Kong team say they found it? At about 13,000 feet. Six Turkish soldiers claimed to see the Ark in 1916. And then a few more sightings. In the early part of the century, a Russian aviator named Vladimir Rokovitsky claimed the discovery of Noah's Ark. He was stationed in southern Russia near the Turkish border in Mount Ararat. As he tested a plane, he and his co-pilot flew over Ararat and discovered on the edge of a glacier what he described as a boat the size of a battleship. He said it was partially submerged in a lake, and he could see there was an opening for a door nearly 20 feet, 7 meters square, but the door was missing. He told his commanding officer an expedition was dispatched to find the Ark and photograph it. The report was forwarded to the Tsar, but was soon overthrown, and the photos and the report perished. Then in 1936, a young British archaeologist named Hardwick Knight hiked across Ararat and discovered interlocking hand-tooled timbers at a height of about 14,000 feet. During World War II, two pilots saw and photographed something they believe was the Ark on Mount Ararat. And now there's these much more recent sightings of it. Do you think it's there? One of the problems is that modern science finds no evidence of a flood, of a worldwide flood. But they're looking for certain kinds of criteria for that. They're looking for shellfish to be found in an even layer of sediment around the whole globe. I'm not going to go into it, but there's, if you're interested in that sort of thing, there are lots of accounts of why that wouldn't take place in a worldwide flood. So then back to verse 17. Behold, I am bringing the flood of water upon the earth to destroy all flesh, in which is the breath of life from under heaven. Everything that is on earth shall perish. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife, and your sons' wives with you. So how many people is that? There's Noah, his wife, his three sons, and their daughters, 8 people. Here's an interesting tidbit for you. In Japan, you know what the Chinese character for ship is? It's the number 8. And the kanji for mouth, and then for boat. 8 mouths on a boat. That's their word for ship. And it goes way back, these Chinese characters do. Why was God destroying all of these people? They'd become so corrupt, whether genetically, I know that's weird. So if you have a problem with that, that's fine with me. But at least we know that they were totally morally corrupt. So much so that God was going to destroy them. The whole planet, except for Noah and his wife and his three sons and their three wives. What did we read in 2 Peter today about what's coming now? He promised that he would never destroy the earth again by flood, but the world is now reserved for what? Destruction by fire. You think it's getting close to what it was like in Noah's day? But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you, and every living thing of all flesh. You shall bring 2 of every kind in the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds of their kind and of the animals after their kind, of every creeping thing on the ground after its kind, 2 of every kind will come in to keep them alive. 2 of every kind will come in to keep them alive. So there's been a lot of discussion in the scientific world. Is this talking about families? Is it talking about species? Is it talking about, right, that kind of division of things? They had a different division. Notice what it says. After its kind. So, what was a kind? If two creatures could mate and produce offspring, that was considered a kind, as far as I can tell. So, you would have offspring that could reproduce. So here's the problem. The scientists say there's way too many animals, there's way too many species in our world for them to fit in an ark. But they've never really done their math. Some evangelical scientists have come up with the math, and they say this. If the ark carried two of every family of animal, every family, there were around 700 pairs of animals that would have to go on the ark. But if the ark carried two of every species of animals, there were about 35,000 pairs of animals. Now, did they have to take big elephants in? Could they have taken adolescents? Could they have taken in the young of all these species so that they would have been smaller? So here's the size of the ark. The ark could carry 136,560 sheep. And most animals are about the size of a sheep or smaller. So given that, 35,000 pairs of animals goes into 136,560 about four times. So there was enough room on the ark to carry a pair of every species of animals on the planet. Would it take much room for moles or mice or butterflies or grasshoppers? Think of all the bugs on that place. Snakes, ants. And then it says, as for you, take for yourself of all food which is edible and gather it to yourself, and it shall be food for you and for them. So take a lot of food. And so much of the space on the ark, that additional space, was used for the storage of food. Now here's the surprising thing, and this is where the message actually comes home. You have the world. It's been so corrupted that Noah alone is found to be a righteous man who walked with God, we're told. And so God decides to destroy the earth, and he pronounces the judgment. He pronounces the destruction. And he gives them 120 years to repent. We're told in 2 Peter and in Hebrews some facts about it, that Noah was a preacher of righteousness. So during this 100 to 120 year period, what was he doing? He was preaching righteousness. He was preaching a right relationship with God. And what do you think people's response to Noah was? Where was he building this? As far as I know, there was no big body of water close by. He was building this boat out in the middle of the desert, and people would have ridiculed him to no end. And he preached and he built for 100 to 120 years and was ridiculed for 100 to 120 years until it started raining and God closed them in. I bet you a lot of people were knocking on the sides of the ark. Now here's the remarkable thing. It ends with, thus Noah did according to all that God commanded him, so he did. What kind of faith would that take? I want you to build an ark because in 120 years I'm going to destroy the planet with the flood. I want you to build it to this size. It's going to be the size of a football stadium, almost. It's going to be bigger than a football stadium as far as its length. And I want you to build it out of gopher wood, and I want you to put pitch on the outside, on the inside. And I want you to grow enough food so you can pack this thing with food. So part of his time was not just building an ark. What was it doing? Farming and collecting food to put in this ark. And all along, people were going, man, that wacko Noah out there in the desert building that big ship, and it's not even close to the water. He is one whacked guy. What kind of faith would that take? And yet, what was the result? That he survived. And that we are here because he survived. He was obedient. And it's not the obedience of just action. It's the obedience of action born out of trust, born out of believing God's promise, born out of believing what he said, that this flood was going to come. And I think about us. Are we called to tasks that seem absolutely insane? I want you to tear down the old church and build a new church. And right when you get started into it and you're not too far into it, but too far to quit, I'm going to collapse the economy on you. And then I'm going to remove about 30 people from you. And here we are. And he calls us to trust him and to actively do what? To actively trust him. So it's not a passive thing. It's not a thing to sit on your hands. It's a thing to say, I trust him. I believe him. I believe he has called us to this day. And I really do. I think there are really good days ahead for this church. He hasn't called us to this point now to say, okay, that's it. You guys are done. What has he called us to? He's called us to proclaim this gospel, to be obedient to this gospel, to see it through. And we look with the eyes of faith, believing his promise to us. Who is the new ark? Who is the new ark? Jesus, right? We put our trust in him. And when we put our trust in him, we will not come under judgment. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life, and he does not come into judgment, but has passed from death to life. Amen. Can you have the faith of Noah? By the Lord's help, can you have the faith of Noah? Give us that faith, Lord. Amen.